period. It's a joyful time for me. Something about this fall season, yeah, brings back many memories of years of practice periods beginning at Green Gulch Farm and Tassajara here in Santa Cruz. It's a natural time to turn inward. The beach days are ending, and the very flow of nature encourages us to settle. A couple weeks ago, I wasn't here, but on September 26th, I acknowledged the 20th anniversary of my ordination as a priest. And so that was a time to stop and reflect. What were these 20 years about? And practice period is, I think, something similar to this. It's a time, it's marking a space to make a commitment to practice in accord with our deepest intention and our heart calling. Maybe quite mysterious, maybe we can't name it exactly. Maybe we would all express our heart's calling slightly differently. But I think all of us drawn to this path, something quite similar. Even if we can't quite find the words for it, here we are in this unique setting. And I think it's helpful to mark beginnings and endings and times for special commitments and times to release them too at the end. My teacher, Tenzin Roshi, when we were living at No Abode Hermitage and we were just in this kind of practice space, we thought, well, let's just have continuous practice period. And he said, actually, I think it's good to have a rhythm instead of just practicing as, especially if you want to practice as intensely as you think you can indefinitely. And maybe it's not such a good idea. It kind of like it just will fizzle out eventually. So if you have this rhythm of times of kind of practicing more intensely in a kind of formal way and then relaxing more, it creates a very nice and natural rhythm. And it seems like the Buddha discovered this, began something like this kind of tradition of practice period 2,500 years ago. I also think of it as, there's many ways we can look at practice period, but I like to think of it as particularly like Sangha practice time. We make commitments to practice period, and they include practice at home, which I think is good. And I've even heard of some modern adaptations. I think there was something going around the web about sit 100 hours in 100 days. Somebody's kind of promoting a kind of digital practice period. Maybe you've seen this. And I think it's maybe a lot of people are interested, if they don't have a practice center especially. And it's kind of like on your own, but maybe knowing there's a group doing it helps one. And I think that's good. It's that knowing the group is joining you in this time period that's helpful. But I think the Sangha practice is really the heart of practice period, practicing together, although practice alone is good, and I deeply honor like the hermit traditions of practicing alone, I think that it's hard to find the full vitality of Zen practice if one's just practicing alone, because one follows one's own, naturally, one follows one's own habitual patterns. Even if we make our own commitments, we kind of make them to ourselves in a maybe habitual way. I've noticed this in myself as I've, you know, made private commitments as well as public commitments. The ones that we do together with the Sangha, I think, are something really vital and challenging because we're all in it together. So we're also begin and end today a 1 year commitment of, many of you know this, Warming the Hearth program, which begins and ends 3 times a year. And so Reverend Hannah Neera is completing 1 year of Warming the Hearth today and stepping out of that into the rest of her practice. Thank you very much, Hannah, for being part of that year. And Stan Cunningham is joining 1 year of Warming the Hearth starting today. Thank you, Stan, for joining. This is a self-designed, year-long practice program where we come together or not. For example, Tony is here today. Welcome, Tony, from Australia. He's been doing Warming the Hearth for a while. We see him on a screen in our meetings. You can practice with the Sangha from the other side of the world during those meetings. But he thought, I think I'll show up in the flesh for Sesshin this week. He dove through the computer screen and landed in the Zendo. Commitment is an interesting thing because in a way, from a vast perspective, everything's already perfect and everything we're doing is a manifestation of our Buddha nature. And yet, our habitual patterns, you know, which ultimately speaking are also manifestations of our true nature. But these habitual patterns, it's a funny thing. Though they're manifestations of the true nature, they're the very thing that block our vision of the true nature. So they're part of the true nature that blocks the full extent of the true nature. And thus, we seem to suffer. We get caught in our habitual patterns. So usually commitment, this is, I think I understand, not just, you know, Zen practice commitments, but maybe any commitments that I can think of seem to be about knowing some true aspiration in our heart, wanting to go there, but knowing that we keep veering off, we keep falling back into our habitual patterns again and again. And so it's a very humble thing, I think, to make a commitment. It's kind of acknowledging, I get caught in my patterns and I need to make this commitment in order to accord with my deepest vow, my deepest heart aspiration. So it might seem like a very strong thing. I'm going to make a huge commitment to, practice the way completely. It might seem like a very strong self that comes forward to do that. But actually, I think the heart of commitment is very humble, very it's a very humble attitude of like, I keep falling away from my true intention. Isn't it strange that we do that? But don't we keep forgetting? So like, it's almost like the small self, I think, actually, is making the commitment on behalf of the big self. Something like that. It's kind of, and so it's coming from big mind, big self, that encourages the small self to say, hey, you, little small self, with all your habitual patterns, wouldn't you like to just live with me, big self? If not all the time, at least more of the time. Yes, actually I would, please. Well then, you're going to need some like skillful means to help do this. But can't I just wait and just see what happens? You can try, but it might not go so well. If you kind of wait and see, then habitual patterns, at least I've noticed my own, are strong. They rule the day, usually. Which is stronger? Our true nature, our perfectly pure, open, free Buddha nature, or our measly, conniving, little self-centered habits? Hard to say which is stronger. I think the Buddha nature maybe is beyond strong and weak. And the habitual patterns are like in this realm of where we think they're strong or weak. So this practice period, as many of you know, but many people didn't hear because it's a new experiment. We tried having some minimal commitments. And it's a question, it's an experiment. And I don't know the results yet. So they were like, maybe they were too much, actually. I don't know. But there's 11 people decided to make the commitments to this practice period. So it's a little smaller than usual because we're asking more. And I just really want to say, I want to really honor the people who stretched a little to make that commitment. And I really also want to honor the people, a lot of people didn't know we were doing this new way and filled out the forms as we've been doing with kind of just a self-designed commitment, which I think is a beautiful thing. And so in a way, we call that part of the practice period too. And even if you didn't even hear about practice period till right now, everything in the practice period is open to everyone. So we're offering more, and some people are stretching to participate more in the Sangha events, and hopefully that will be an encouragement to everyone else to participate as much as you can, as much as you think is supportive. I think this is a danger, or a kind of a maybe the shadow side of commitment. I've noticed again for myself, sometimes the small self is doing this, right? I think the small self's doing it on behalf of the big self. But sometimes the small self is doing it and forgets that it's doing it on behalf of the big self, and it's just doing it on behalf of the small self. So it's like, I'm going to just do as much as I can, and just like, so I'll feel good about it. And like, I don't even know if these things are valuable or not, these practice things, but at least I'll be in the practice period, and like, isn't that cool? Isn't that good? And I think it's a very natural thing to get into that kind of mind, that kind of goal-oriented for the small self. And so I think that's okay, because it's very natural, if we keep remembering that it's on behalf of the big self. And maybe it's just my own view of like these activities that we offer in the practice period. I think these are all supporting, opening to that which goes beyond our usual habitual patterns. But they might not be for me or you or any particular person any time. I'd be like, actually, I think I need a break from this. Like, I'm getting burnt out on these Zen practice activities. So each person find their way. Sometimes it might be actually, maybe the practice period is doing less at Zen Center. And I think that's valid, could be valid, right? So whatever is actually seems helpful. And if we're not sure, then we try these traditional forms and practices that are kind of time-honored, beneficial activities, at least in the Zen world. But check it out. We can check in at the end. Like, I think maybe Zazen's maybe not so helpful, actually. we might come to the conclusion. Or too much Zazen might not be helpful. I think for some people it's not. So, we see. But I found Zazen to be one of the main things that really helps me like let go of my own way. And Sesshin really seems to help me again and again. It's hard. Usually anything that's like kind of like breaking through or challenging our habitual patterns usually is hard. That's why we usually go with the habitual patterns. Right? So if it's challenging and difficult, often that means we are working or we're challenging the habits. Also, I would just like to mention in one of the events in practice period and throughout the year is called Dokusan. Maybe everyone knows somewhat about Dokusan. It's a Japanese word for literally like individual meeting or like one-on-one respectful visit, you could translate it as. And it's just a chance to come together with one of the practice leaders and have a conversation about practice. And I think just a great blessing of our tradition that we have such a form. And ultimately there's no special thing that has to happen in those meetings. But I think it may be beneficial to look at, well, some things that may help kind of fine-tune it. Because some people are like, well, what do we do? Just, here I am. Oh, we're supposed to, what should we talk about? I think these Dokusan meetings are nice to, like, have a kind of focused practice point that you like to bring up. Sometimes people would say, maybe don't bring something beforehand because then it's not as fresh. It's just meeting in the moment and seeing what comes up. So I think if you're really like really present and up for meeting in the moment in a way that's as present as possible, I think that's okay to not bring anything. But then be really ready to see what comes up and express it. And I also think it's completely okay to have something. And I've heard about all different styles of how different teachers like to do Dokusan, and some actually encourage, maybe even keep like a practice journal about, you know, questions that come up in your practice or issues that come up or difficulties. And then you have this, and you know, even though I had never heard of this until recently, I saw somebody encourage that. I thought, well, I've done that before. Maybe not exactly like a journal book, but like I would write notes about things that were like, this is something I want to come back and look at, a question about practice or life practice, but from a kind of Dharma angle. So it's not so much like advice about what to do in a certain relationship. I mean, it could be that, but from the point of view of what we understand to be our Zen practice, so the principles of like basic principles of like what is the attachment here? I'm not quite sure. What is release? Or I can't seem to find the release in this situation. Something like that. That's maybe one of those core practice issues. things like doubt is coming up, or like this aspect of practice I really don't understand, or maybe even like this issue of commitments, like I feel like I don't know about this commitments thing, or aspirations for the practice period is a nice thing to bring at the near the beginning of a practice period, or something that like this something's weighing heavily in my heart and I want to confess it to someone in a space where I know that it's safe to do that and it's private, and that just by being heard it maybe releases it. Like we often find that happens. These are all things that could happen in Dokusan. It's like if Zazen mind is just opening more and more to the full extent of the suchness of the present experience. Maybe that's a kind of grand way of talking about Zazen, but you know, maybe we have some sense of it is at its best, it's something like that. Dokusan can be that too, right? How can I do open to the full extent of the experience of the moment in this particular form instead of facing the wall silently, facing another person and using words? So, therefore, it's not a kind of like chat about what I'm doing in my life. I mean, it might be if the events I'm doing in my life are like the heart of my practice question, but I don't think it has to be a kind of a long story about these are the things I'm doing. I think sometimes like reporting is actually okay. Reporting like our practice since the last Dokusan. But I think focus, since this is a chance to talk about Dokusan, focusing the practice issue. Maybe if you have like 10 of them, just say, for this one, I'm just going to choose one or a few. But I think sometimes when it's simpler and narrowed down, it's a more vital, alive conversation. And then you can do it again with the next one. So I hope everyone feels welcome to join in any of the practice period activities such as Dokusan and Sesshin, which begins tomorrow. We've been doing the style of Sesshin here where basically anyone can just come and really kind of drop in for any sections of Zazen or Dharma talks, everything except for meals, because the Tenzo has calculated the amount of food for the people sitting. So I think if somebody was brand new to Zazen, it might be challenging. But for everyone in the room already, you know how to sit quietly and still. So you come at the beginning of a period and you can sit a few periods. This upcoming Sesshin, starting tomorrow, is a kind of a teaching study Sesshin. So there's a lot of Zazen, like every Sesshin, but there's also longer talks in the morning and afternoon about the Zen ancestors and their awakening as inspiration for our awakening, the transmission of light. Anyone have any questions about the practice period? Yes?
Will there be a schedule that we can consult? I know it's not normally posted.
It actually is posted.
Oh, it is posted.
Yeah, and it'll be posted throughout. Yeah, it's posted tonight. And so, Yeah. You're welcome. And if you're... didn't kind of sign up for the practice period, I really think that this is the time that you can just, if you like, It's an opportunity because we just opened it and we'll close it in 2 months. It's an 8-week practice period. So you can, if you like, use this time. You don't even need to tell anyone. As a time to like focus on you know, formal Zen practice, as opposed to like our whole life is, it could be seen as Zen practice, right? So, practice period. Yes.
Can you talk a little more about skillful means and how that applies to the practice period? Skillful means is something that I have a lot of trouble with knowing what it means.
I think in this case we could see it as some activity, some beneficial, skillful activity to help others and ourselves, and often has a kind of connotation or feeling that it's maybe a little bit contrived. Now, skillful means is like one of the perfections of the bodhisattvas, one of the paramitas. There's 6 paramitas, but sometimes they're said to be 10. And the 4 others besides those 6, the 7th is skillful means. So this is a advanced practice of great bodhisattvas, and you could say, but great bodhisattvas do contrived activity. And I think we could say it's like that, in a way. The Lotus Sutra is one of the classic examples, sutras about skillful means. Maybe most known for its teaching of Buddha's skillful means. So there's all kinds of stories in there about the Buddha kind of almost like lying, like kind of playing tricks on his students to help them, skillfully help them to find their way. Some of you may know about these stories in the Lotus Sutra, like saying, I'm actually dying. Or he sends word that he's actually died, the Buddha. Well, he tells this story about like a doctor who's trying to convince his children to take medicine to help them. And but they're like, well, we'll see about that. We'll ask our dad, the doctor, maybe later, because we don't mind being a little sick now. We're busy playing. And so the Buddha, in this story, or the Buddha's telling this metaphor, how he sometimes teaches with his father in the story, the doctor sends word to the kids that he died, and the kids get that, really like shocks the kids, right? And they're like, oh, our great father, the doctor, we thought he'd live so much longer. Now that he's died, it kind of snapped us out of our reverie, and maybe we better take the medicine that he prescribed after all. And then, but the father didn't really die. So was that lying, or was it doing something a little bit contrived to help the children take the medicine? There's lots of stories in the Lotus Sutra like this. And so we could say, doing things that are a little contrived but that seem beneficial, and in that sense, like making a commitment to a practice period, I confess, it's a little contrived, I think, actually. Some of you might even feel like, well, maybe I wouldn't bother doing it because it actually does seem a little contrived. I'm always practicing, and I'm not going to like practice more now. I always want to practice completely. So what's this thing of like setting up a time to practice like more, more intensely or something? What's that all about? So I understand. I feel that way too sometimes. And so I was like, do we really want to have a practice period this fall? it's always kind of a question. And yet I think, well, it is kind of contrived, but actually, this is why it's this humble thing, I feel like, the small self, the small habit self, right, is a totally contrived being. Everything it does is contrived. That's its definition, right? This little me that lives in this kind of self-contained skin bag, separate from the rest of the universe, is and thinks, I'm going to do this and that, I'm not going to do this and that. It's all kind of like everything it thinks and does is kind of contrived. And then the Buddha nature that's like this light shining through it is, you could say, is completely uncontrived. It's just inconceivable radiance. But because the small skin bag self is kind of seems to block the view of the radiant light, we're like, well, since it's living in the world of contrivance, let's make a contrivance that actually is beneficial. Called practice period. So we could call that maybe a skillful means. Is that what you had in mind?
Yep.
Yeah.
I know what it means.
Yes.
It does seem like the making the commitment just helps one notice more often what we're thinking, and just kind of core practice of mindfulness and coming back to presence. And just thinking about that line in the sutra we chant on Wednesday morning: stop thinking and talking, there's nothing you won't be able to know.
Yeah.
And
and also in that sutra, in that song of the trusting mind, there's the line about, if the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. So we kind of know about that, right? And so that's part of the thing is I don't want to generate this like and dislike thing more. And I feel like if I made it a commitment to practice period, I think it might bring up more like and dislike, right? I'm actually really want to watch this movie instead of go to Zazen. But I made this commitment to it. Now, if I didn't have the commitment, I'd just go with the like, but I wouldn't even notice it was the like. But now I'm coming up against something that, again, I think if we know that it comes from our deepest aspiration, that's why it's tricky. If it's not coming from that place, it's just another maybe superficial like. Like more Zazen, I should like it because Kokyo says I should. But actually I don't really. And so then we have to pay attention to that kind of thing too. But if it's, no, I really feel like that's helpful to just let go of my preference. And I think practice period and sesshin is a much more intensified version of let go of your preference, let go of your preference. We don't even get a break from it hardly, right? Until we just say, okay. that's the trick of practice period and sesshin. And any commitment is if we try to go with the preference and weasel around the commitment, then the mind is lost in confusion, and it's basically miserable, right? We may have noticed, we may notice in the next 5 days, and then, but the secret, I think we all know the secret, actually, to some extent or another. The secret is, that's not the only way, right? We can struggle and struggle, but we know there's another way, which is just open and release into the situation with the Sangha That's why I think it's quite hard to do this alone, because it's hard to tell what the situation is. But when there's a bunch of people sitting together, then it looks like the release here is to release into this group of people sitting together. Strange thing. And of course we can find our way within that. There's no set way. It might mean moving regularly, but we still stay in that container. And so I think all kinds of these contrived practices, I think one great advantage of these skillful means is they show us like and dislike really clearly. That's why they're challenging and difficult often. Because I didn't think that I had any likes and dislikes, actually, until I sat sesshin. Some of us feel that way. But it's not just obviously, it's not just about self-torture, right? It's like, no, if we're forced into this situation or kind of pushed into this thing where if I indulge the like and dislike, I really see how it just makes it worse. And there must be another way. And of course, there is, to just let go. So sometimes we go to these drastic means to help us let go, because we're such strange creatures as humans. Yes, Richard. Oh, excuse me, just a minute. Could the tea servers collect the cups while we're talking? Please. Yes, great question. Yeah, I've actually struggled with it, this practice period especially, because when it's completely self-designed, then I think everyone finds their way. And some people are doing a lot more events at the Zendo, and some aren't doing that much. And we understand, and I think it's important for everyone to understand that we actually honor everyone, what everyone is trying to do within their circumstances. And everyone has to find that for themselves. And so, yeah, I feel the struggle this practice period of saying, let's have these minimal commitments, and some people can't do them. I feel the pain of that, actually. And actually, at the same time, I feel like, well, I know some of the people who talked to me about that, and they were kind of like, I think people use that, some of the 11 people who are doing it, use that as a kind of stretch, which I think they wouldn't have if we just had recommendations or completely optional. So this is the dilemma. Somebody even said, well, maybe we have two different practice periods. And I think, two different, you know. But maybe that's what it is, actually, right? And maybe we shouldn't have a post a list of people and things like this. I welcome all your feedback about this issue, actually. And maybe next time we'll go back to the way of completely just self-design with no special thing. I would say this particular, just to know where I was coming from, this particular idea of having these minimal commitments, which, you know, are somewhat arbitrary, but was mostly, it came from various things, but the main one I feel like is that over the last year or so, especially like practice period classes, where we have a class series, they used to be more like people would do a whole class series, and they've gotten to the point where almost nobody does the whole thing. Some people start and they don't finish, but some people don't start and then they finish. Some people come to one in the middle, and it's all this kind of random. It's not really like a class series anymore. So maybe we should have just had that be the one thing, or you know. And still, everyone's welcome to drop in to class series. We do have it open like that, but it was an encouragement. Well, let's look at it as we're just going to come no matter what, and we have like three different times of class series actually, so and three different topics, so one can choose between them. Plus a shuso tea. So that was part of the thought: is how can we treat it more like this is like hard to fit in, but I'm really gonna like make it a priority. Again, my teacher, the classes at Green Gulch were mostly for non-residents. The residents could come, but mostly people would come from the Bay Area to those evening classes. And he at one point started saying, if you miss one of the series, then please don't come back to the other ones, to kind of help encourage people. You can stop, but don't miss one and then come back. And people, of course, totally got all riled up about that. But I have to miss this one. And so, I don't know, right? This is all like the Buddha's contrived skillful means that's like a big mess. I think we have to get messy, these things. And it's all an experiment, right? But I do really want to honor, especially the people who actually didn't know the part about these minimal commitments and filled out practice period forms. It was quite painful, actually, for me to say, actually, this one we're doing this different thing. And that's painful. And then some people said they picked up the form and then they saw that part and oh, actually, never mind. So that's hard. In the past, there have been people who, you know, committed to like one period of zazen. And for that was maybe something more than they had a commitment before. And I honor that. So I really want to honor anybody who's making any commitment using that time of a practice period, whatever it is. It's not about better or worse. Maybe this requirements thing was a little biased towards, let's really encourage the people who can stretch up to that. And yeah, maybe a little biased in that towards those ones. And maybe I hope it was helpful for them. So consider yourself, everybody, to be part of it if you'd like. Mm-hmm.
Well, I appreciate you talking about it as an experiment, and I think that would be really good for all of us to bear in mind as we do this, whether we're doing it as a person whose name is on the list or a person whose name isn't on the list but who's still coming and doing things.
Yeah.
Because I think that you're... intention of wanting to support regular attendance in classes is very helpful, because it's, you know, I mean, certainly for anybody who's teaching the class and for the people who participate, you can go so much deeper if you have continuity.
Yeah.
And people kind of can continue things from one to another.
Yeah.
But then maybe, you know, if that's the main motivator, maybe then the thing to look at, maybe the Sashin thing is too much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm thinking a person with a 9-to-5 Monday through Friday job, they could do the class.
Yeah.
And they could probably do maybe 2 or 3 days, I don't mm-hmm. know, of Sashin, because on the weekends there are people who have full-time jobs mm-hmm. who are participating in Sashin.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, to keep kind of calibrating, mm-hmm. like, what's the thing that actually a person could do that's a stretch, mm-hmm. but that does have an invitation mm-hmm. commitment.
Yep. So different people have different things. When I talk to people about their forms, Sashin, I think, is a big one for people, but some people could easily do that, but they couldn't do the classes. Mm-hmm. So Sesshin's a big stretch because it's whole days. I admit, we did have it. So it's 5 Sesshin days, and we offer this practice period. We have 13 Sesshin days. So the 5 could be done all on weekends for people who. But that's giving up 2. We have 5 weekend days.
Oh, actually,
yeah, with a 1-day sitting.
Oh.
So it's possible if one gives up 2 weekends, 2.5 weekends. That's a big thing, right?
There.
But that's practice period. Or one could do it all during the week if one had, you know. So, yeah, maybe we make less of that. People do what they can. But everybody's commitment is honored. I know that people like to do what they can, and I think that's beautiful. And it is understood that people's situations are different. So, now that we've begun, let's continue for another 59 days. Practice period. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are